Coming up on KUCB News, managers have released crab quotas for Bristol Bay and the Bering Sea, and tonight's city council meeting will be the last session for Mayor Frank Kelty and Councillor Roger Rowland. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Tuesday, October 8th, 2019. With the fishing season starting next week, managers have released crab quotas for Bristol Bay and the Bering Sea. The total allowable catch for Red King crab is about 3.8 million pounds. That's almost 12% less than last season, which was already the lowest since 1996. Meanwhile, the Tanner crab season has been closed entirely due to below-threshold estimates of mature males. Managers have also canceled the St. Matthew Island Blue King crab fishery, which has been declared overfished, and continued the longtime closures for Pribilof Island red and blue crab, which have fallen below federal minimums for two decades. This season, snow crab is the only species to see a quota increase. Fishermen are allowed to catch about 34 million pounds, which is about 24% more than last winter. While Opelio is up, biologists say many crab populations are declining as a result of hard-to-pinpoint environmental factors, including warming water temperatures and bycatch issues. They'll review this season's stock assessments and fishing quotas at a public meeting tomorrow morning. It starts at 9 o'clock at City Hall. Then crab fishing opens next Tuesday, October 15th at noon. And now let's take a look back at crabbing earlier this year. According to a recently released recap from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, crabbing in the Norton Sound was underwhelming in many ways. At the beginning of 2019, Fish and Game set the region's lowest guideline harvest level in 20 years. Poor ice conditions and early sea ice loss prevented many from crabbing in the winter, and when all was said and done, at the end of the summer, only about half of the quota was met. KNOM's Davis Hovey reports.
Oh, it was definitely a year to forget. Just poor on both ends. We had problems with the winter fishery. You know, we only got about a quarter of what was available.
Jim Menard, the area manager for Fish and Game, has worked through almost 20 years of crabbing in Nome and the Norton Sound. In that time, he says he's never seen a harvest of less than 200,000 pounds of crab.
Usually we got about 300,000. I mean, the lowest we had ever harvested in this stretch in the 2000s was about 240,000 back in 2002.
This year's total guideline harvest level, or GHL, set by the Department of Fish and Game, was over 150,000 pounds. By the end of the summer crabbing season, on September 3rd, fishers had caught slightly more than 78,000 pounds, the grand total for the 2019 winter and summer seasons. There are many possible reasons why crab harvest was so low in Norton Sound this year, such as early sea ice retreat during winter crabbing and more warm water predator fish present in the region during the summer season. Although an exact explanation has not been determined yet, Menard says the crab appear to be moving away from their usual habitats in the Norton Sound.
As far as what happened this year, you know, did they move farther offshore? Or did they get a much bigger head start and were scattered with the ice breaking up so early and the fresh water coming out? You know, did they start marching farther out into the deep that we couldn't get them? You know, that's one theory we've talked to the fishermen about. You know, is it that they were just far out and scattered everywhere? They never congregated like they usually do.
Despite an underwhelming year for Norton Sound Red King crab, there is still light at the end of the tunnel, according to Menard.
Yeah, we're kind of in the trough of things, but we do expect it to start going up. We do have good recruitment coming in a few years, so we figure it's going to bounce back up unless something's wrong with our calculations.
Though the new recruitment of crab is not expected to show up this coming year, Menard hopes the 2020 winter crabbing season will be better than the last one. A determining factor for the successful winter crabbing will be the condition of the ice coverage and its stability in Norton Sound. According to Rick Toman, a climate specialist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy, or ACAP, there's no reason to expect ice in the area anytime soon.
It's an experimental model from NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, and that right now goes out through October 26, and that shows no ice at all forming in the Bering Sea, including Norton Sound, through the 26th.
Now that NOAA's Northern Bering Sea trawl surveys are finished, Fish and Game, crabbers, and even Menard are eagerly waiting to see what they've discovered about crabs' movements. Lyle Britt with NOAA Fisheries expects the trawl survey results to be released to the public next month. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Hovey.
After a roughly seven-month search, Unalaska's health clinic hired a new CEO over the summer. Melanie Tiura signed a three-year contract with Alulik Family and Health Services last month, taking over the position from Will Rogers, who served as interim director since March. I sat down with Tiura to talk to her about the status of the clinic and where she hopes to take it.
I am a dietitian and diabetes educator by training, and I worked clinically for almost 13 years. So public health, community health has always been my interest area throughout my career. I went into management sometime, I guess that was probably 2010. I became the health education director. That was the time that we moved to Dillingham, Alaska. Shortly after being there, I became the community health services division manager. So my home base was Dillingham, but we served the 34 villages surrounding Dillingham as well. So that was a great learning environment. At that point, I also managed our HRSA grant, which is the same grant that we have here at IFHS. And then in 2014, I received an offer to go back to our hometown, to the hospital that actually I had done much of my clinical work with. And so we did that. I was there for 5 years, and then here I am.
Mm-hmm. And what are your impressions so far? What do you think of this place?
I love this place. So the community has been great. You know, I've been asked that question a lot from family and friends back in Michigan. You know, what's it like and what are the people like and, you know, what's the town like and the clinic. And it has been a delightful experience so far. So my family is really excited to be here. The PCR has things going on all the time. So it feels like we're busy every day. Last night we were jelly roll quilting, and you know, tonight we'll be soccer, and so there's always something happening, and we love that. So my husband and my 5 kids are here with me, and they're enjoying it as much as I am.
What is the latest on the clinic's finances? Will you be planning on making another emergency funding request from the city?
Yeah, so finances with the clinic are an interesting history. So again, I've been here a month, so I've pieced together what I can so far. The last couple of years were hard for the clinic. They relied on a lot of locum providers, providers brought in from out of the area to cover the emergency call. So it's not so much the clinic side of it, but it's the emergency response side of it that really does cost significantly for the clinic. So they had had some turnover of providers. They had had some volume challenges, I believe some pricing challenges as well. But finances were hard. And you know, that's not unique to rural healthcare in Alaska. That's everywhere. So figuring out kind of how to improve is a difficult and rigorous process where you're turning over every stone. So the city was gracious enough to offer a loan at the end of 2017. 2018, the organization didn't rely on the funding from that. So we do still have most of that funding. We have dipped into it prior to my arrival, a small amount, but the clinic is doing well. Our volumes are continuing to improve. We hired 2 new providers, which is so exciting. And so patients who want to plan their visits, they have somewhere to go. And I think that has been a challenge over time, where it turned into more of a walk-in service. And that's not the best way to proactively plan your health care. We want you to have annual visits. We want you to know what your cholesterol is. We want you to know what your blood pressure looks like. And we want you to manage those things before you need to go into the emergency side, before you have the heart attack, before you have the stroke, you know, before you have kind of an end stage result of not managing something earlier. So,
yeah, so along those lines, I know the previous clinic director, James Keck, wanted to increase the patient volume in order to finance the clinic and make it more stable.
Right.
So what is your philosophy on how to get the clinic stable and lower costs for patients?
Yeah, and James did do some nice steps to lower costs for patients. That doesn't address the overall stability issue of the clinic unless more people come, right? That's the point, is that you've increased access. And he was right on the money. Volume is the way to do that. We have providers that have schedules that are open, and so access is the goal, so that patients who call today can get in, maybe today, hopefully tomorrow, even for planned things. And so right now our access is beautiful, so our patients can get in and our planned volume is increasing. And so that is the way to a sustainable future. So now that's on the practice side. So that's on the clinic side. And then we have this whole other issue in rural Alaska, and that's the emergency care. So because we're not an emergency room, we don't have trauma status, there are various pieces here on the billing side that we don't qualify for or haven't qualified for in the past that would affect our revenue and our ability to sustain those services. So essentially, we're trying to grow one side of the business in order to pay for the other, because the other is what people really know they need, right? If you twist your ankle at midnight and it's badly broken, what do, right? You need to have someone to call. If you have chest pain, you're going to need to call somebody. And so that kind of care is invaluable to patients. But if you're not using it, nobody's paying for it, right? So we are. And that's an important component of healthcare. And so the city has recognized that and has provided grants in the past and a loan most recently to support those efforts. I would expect we will continue to apply for the community support grant, because that's a service that our community needs that isn't being funded another way. But as far as emergency funds, we're going to try to stand on our own 2 feet.
I know that so many people leave the island to go get usually less expensive care in Anchorage and other places. Is there a strategy? How would we get people to use the clinic and services that we have here in the community?
Yeah, we already took step one, right? We hired consistent providers, so you can see the doctor of your choice. We also cover a wide variety of services. Our services are affordable. I'm very familiar with pricing structures in other areas in this state and also outside of the state, and we're comparable. So we're doing cost-effective care as well, and you're not going to find better. I've been really, really pleased with what we're doing at the clinic so far, and I've done physician recruitment, and I've built practices for a long time now, and what we already had here upon my coming in was great. So this will be an easy way to build, is to have good providers.
And so you said you previously worked in rural Alaska and then you left. Can you talk about why you decided to return to rural Alaska?
Oh, yeah. Alaska's always had a special place in our heart. And once you've lived here, there's a fondness that's not replaced by any other area. So I did move back to Michigan after living in Dillingham. We had planned to stay in Dillingham a couple of years, was our initial intent. That was a very different life for us. And so we weren't sure how we would like it, but we loved it. And we stayed for almost 4. And so, you know, the position in Michigan did come up. It was a very nice position. So that was an opportunity to get back closer to family and for my kids to spend time with their cousins. And so that was great. That was a good time for us as well. And yet everyone was quite positive about a possible transition back to Alaska. So this position did come up, and it certainly looked like an opportunity in a community that we would like. I'm not so much about career or climbing the ladder. I want to be in a place where I feel like I can contribute. And my family wants to be in a community where they know that they're a part of things. And so this was unique in those aspects, because it is a community like no other that I've seen in Alaska. Very close-knit and very kind people. I've never actually seen any demonstrations of kindness like I've seen already here in any other place.
That was Melanie Tierra, the new CEO at Alulik Family and Health Services. The Unalaska City Council meets tonight. It'll be the last session for Mayor Frank Kelty and Councillor Roger Rowland, two longtime local politicians who declined to run for re-election this year. If the council certifies election results as expected, their seats will be filled by Vince Chudiakoff Sr. and Darren Nicholson, respectively. Meanwhile, councillors will also consider whether to fund a fireworks show for New Year's Eve. The City Council meets tonight at 6 o'clock at City Hall. You can also listen live here on 89.7 FM. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.